Hello and welcome to the Saxo Market Call. It is Friday, 12th of March, 2021. Markets in a swell mood, at least in the U.S. yesterday, where we saw the S&P 500 actually managing to rally to a new all-time high. Note that that is on the cash index. It's always important when you're trading futures and CFDs as a Saxo client, for example, to keep an eye on the cash index somewhere. It's readily available elsewhere because those levels are key. And the reason you get a new record high in the cash and not the futures is the situation with dividends when you're buying futures. That's an ex-dividend future price. So anyway, we managed a slight new high for the cycle, or an all-time high, 10 points above it, in fact, 39.60 or so, before pulling back into the close. Now, I would just note on slide two in today's slide deck that we have some pretty interesting momentum divergence here, especially on the MACD. If the price action sort of falters here, where we have a new high with the MACD essentially trading flat because we've been back and forth. So interesting to watch that. NASDAQ, of course, having a banner day. Peter, yesterday with a lot of the speculative stuff doing quite well. What's your take? And it's kind of interesting to see the action fading overnight. We had a internal conversation as well about the stimulus checks. These are hitting the streets next week in all likelihood. And you told me something about an interesting survey of what people plan to do with those stimulus checks. Take us through that.
Yeah, there was a survey coming out yesterday in the US that the majority of people under 35 are expected to spend their money on stocks or other financial instruments. So as you pointed out in our internal call, next week could really turn out to be a strong rebound for equity markets, simply because of fresh money in the hands of the marginal buyer, and especially the marginal buyer of technology stocks. We know young people have a propensity to buy these technology stocks, and as you pointed out yesterday, I mean, bubble stocks were up 6%, green stocks 5%, e-commerce 4%. So it was a pretty good day yesterday. But I think the overall U.S. stock market performance actually shows. The thing we've talked about, that the overall rise in interest rates, whether it's how much of that is on inflation or economic expectations rising, etc., it's a mix. It's not impacting the overall market to a large degree. The free cash flow yield is pretty high still for the MSCI World, also S&P 500. So the equity risk premium is solid. It is the most speculative parts where the equity valuations have been the most aggressive, that is, the most sensitive to these interest rates. And that's why the S&P hit a new all-time high yesterday on the close, whereas the NASDAQ is still down 5 or 6% from the high. So, and I think this divergence could continue as interest rates climb higher as we close the output gap in the US.
Yeah, and then we've had so much feedback and interest in these equity baskets that you've been putting together. You mentioned things like bubble stocks. That's not just a moniker. It's also, you've put together a list of these bubble stocks attractive performance, and you put out the chart to pretty much daily. So you can see that on slide three. But you're creating a new basket on travel, which of course is going to be very interesting as vaccines are rolled out and presumably some normalization of activity unfolds.
Yeah, so we'll be launching it today. Our initial idea was actually to do a travel and leisure, but leisure is such a broad theme and can be sliced and diced in so many ways. So we actually ended up narrowing down this basket to a travel basket. I think it's pretty interesting. It will have airliners, airports, airline manufacturers, hotels, ski resorts, booking platforms for traveling, travel agencies, etc. So it's and it's pretty broad in terms of diversification as well. So it will be an interesting basket to track when the vaccines are being rolled out and the U.S. is opening up. And you had the Biden administration saying yesterday that they're aiming for a complete normalization by July 4th for the big celebration of the Independence Day there. And in Europe, we're aiming at around the same time. So it will be a crucial basket to follow. And then, as I write in the headline here on slide three, India is the next one on in our pipeline that we'll be rolling out, simply because of clients' request about India. There's a lot of interest in India for the future as a long-term investing. But it's a market where it's not really accessible. You can do it through some ETFs, but you're getting a lot of different companies there, and some of them are not really good. So we're coming up with our own basket of Indian companies listed in Singapore, London, and New York.
Cool stuff. And the other one of the other things we talked about in this internal call is the quiet, not so quiet for some that are focusing on it, obviously, but the big rise in Volkswagen, which is pushing up against some massive levels on the chart, stretching back to 10 plus years. I guess this is a play that and the market share battle, people are starting to look at Volkswagen as a major contender here.
Yeah, I will have to dig in a little bit deeper into what's really been driving the move. But as you can see here on slide 4, you can really see you would expect all car makers to respond negatively, at least in the short term, to a rising interest rate, simply because it's a capital intensive industry and a rising cost of capital from rising interest rates is obviously bad for your discount rate and the value. But and we have seen that with Tesla because it's also basically valued. But what we have seen, as you can see, that Volkswagen have actually gained. So while Tesla basically collapsed, you had Volkswagen really gaining, and it's up 26% for the year. Tesla is unchanged for the year. And I think you're right. I mean, we've been pointing it out for a couple of months now that if you look at the largest electrical vehicle market in the world, which is Europe, I mean, Volkswagen is really taking the lead here, and a lot of their models across the e-tron for Audi or the ID3, they're now rolling out an ID4. They also released the other day in Shanghai their ID6, I think, which is a 7-seat SUV with EV. And now this Herbert Diess, which is the CEO of Volkswagen, he's actually creating the same playbook as the rest of the leaders in the major clean technology companies, including Elon Musk from Tesla. And he's taking this playbook of being a visible public figure. So he just recently, went on Twitter. He's already have almost 30,000 followers. He's very active, and they talk about, the transformation of the green transformation, electrical vehicles. And then you can see here, I put in a small insert as well, that he's pinned this tweet that they are following Tesla and will launch a huge battery day early next week, where they will show their capabilities in battery technology and mileage and cost. So you can see they changing the way they communicate with the world. And I think that alone changes the perspective of the company.
Yeah. And then 2 cents anecdotally, what I've seen, just the specs of the Volkswagen cars compared to what I've seen in other cars and compared to Tesla, is much more favorable. And you start to see them pop up on the street all over the place here in Denmark. So a far more prominent presence in the street. Let's shift gears a little bit. Yesterday was a key moment for the ECB and the Euros. We had an ECB meeting. I was a bit surprised that they leaned on the accelerator and announced this acceleration of bond purchases. They didn't say by how much they would be accelerating it, but they're bringing forward some of their purchases and their PEPP QE program. And then you saw a mixed message, though, because they said, we don't want to send the impression that we're increasing the overall size of the program. This sort of dovish, then slightly hawkish sounding thing pumped the euro up a little bit higher towards 120. It fell short of that level and it's traded considerably lower again overnight, just emphasizing that 120 level is so important. You can see a chart on slide 5. But I'll tell you, there's a couple things here working against the euro's favor. Just in general, the fact that they're doing this kind of activity when you've seen such a modest rise in Europe in the first place, but just showing how attractive the dollar has become in terms of what you can secure in currency hedged positions. You've got a great chart and great perspective on that on slide 6, talking about versus Greece. So take us through that and your impression of the ECB meeting.
Yes, John. So in slide 6, you will find sovereigns from the periphery, 10 years yields against the yield that US treasuries from 7 to 10 years maturities are offering in yield once they are hedged against the euro. And what we can find here is that as treasury yields are rising, the convenience to be invested in the periphery is decreasing. And if we take, for example, 10 years Greek bonds and we compare it with what US treasuries of similar maturities are offering right now, we will find that Greek bonds offer 0.8% in yield, while once hedged against the euro, the US treasuries offer around 1.3%. So this is a massive point, John, because this means that especially for countries like Greece, where we their government bonds are owned mainly by foreign investors. These foreign investors might want to rotate towards U.S. treasuries because obviously they would be moving at to higher yielding securities, offering more safety compared to Greece, and all in all, they will be better off. And I think that this is something that the ECB is dismissing at the moment and is becoming particularly dangerous. Yesterday, at the ECB meeting, it was clear that they put a lot of hopes in the PEP program, but they are failing to see that the PEP program, the way it is right now, would lead to even more scarcity of collateral in the euro area, because 25% of the ECB purchases has to be directed towards German bonds. And so basically a program as it is a failing to tackle any volatility that can come out from the periphery if we see a rotation towards the US treasuries, as we just explained.
Yeah, that's a key point. And especially just, you know, just emphasize that Germany has so much room to do so much more stimulus at the drop of a hat. It would make everybody's lives easier, but that's not the German way. Let's look out as well. I saw an interesting story cross my radar in Bloomberg this morning. It was an article that I tweeted out on comments about flows in the corporate credit space in the US, where a lot of especially retail investors are leaving the likes of these bond ETFs like the JNK and the HYG, which are actually responsible for quite a bit of the liquidity in the space. So I put a chart up on slide 7 showing the spread in brown there of a Barclays credit spread, high yield credit spread, and inverted that, and then against the actual JNK ETF. And you can see they of course track each other very, very tightly. And the recent divergence there is due to the credit spread to a degree, but also mostly due to the strong rise in U.S. Yields. So a yield rise that's making the price mark down. Of course, you're getting constant dividends payments or coupon payments, I should say, however you want to call it for an ETF that are changing the total return picture in the background. But it's just interesting to see that divergence. Maybe a little bit of corporate credit focus needs to come in here if those flows increase. And the KKR, the famed leverage buyout history, bond investing, credit investing outfit, had the comment that they were concerned about Fed signaling on what they plan to do about credit. I think it's very interesting to see how the Fed support or not shapes up for the credit space, the high risk credit space, as we get post-pandemic, when there's not as much pressure for them to do that much support. And nominally speaking, they never did that much support anyway, except rhetorically. They only have some $14 billion in corporate holdings through ETFs and actual corporate bonds. So just a note to follow this space. I think that's the key message. And then I'll tell you, back to you again. We had this 30-year auction in the U.S. yesterday. You know, not a huge headline generator, but we had the 30-year yields, as I show on slide 9, skipping ahead of your slide a bit there, where they are currently, or at least when I took the chart print this morning, that is above the highest close by a decent margin. Above 235 basis points, and the small weekly inset showing that maybe the 2.5% level could be a focus. But take us through what you think about this this auction and your chart there on slide 8.
Well, I think that the main point, the main takeaway of this week within U.S. Treasuries is that the auctions went just okay. However, we have seen that foreign investors are not rushing to buy US treasuries at current yield level. So this leaves US treasuries basically prone to volatility. And as we are entering next week into a week where there is the FOMC meeting, we have another bond auctions for 20 years bonds and 10 years TIPS. I think that we are going to see more volatility in this space. One of the main reasons for this is that the break-even rates continue to rise. So the inflation expectations now of 5 years break-evens has risen in the past couple of days to the highest level since 2008. And the problem is that treasury yields are lagging this signal, showing that the sell-off is quite major. And this is something you can see in slide 8. So the main takeaway here is, okay, bond auctions, they went fine, they didn't spur volatility, but it doesn't mean that the bearish sentiment in US treasuries is over. And it's important to understand that we might be in a consolidation area between 1.5% and 1.65% in 10 years yields. But once that this 1.65% is going to be tested, US treasuries will fall into a fast area where yields are going to be attracted towards this 2% level.
All right. And as we look at those rising yields in the US, so key as a driver in FX for the Japanese yen, which is the most pronounced trend going here, the Japanese yen to the downside. Look at your weekly charts and put up that channel that I show on slide 10. You can see that this 110 area coming into view is really critical stuff. And just an absolutely critical week next week with the FOMC, as Althea mentioned, with these treasury yields getting to where they are. And with the Bank of Japan on Friday, at which it is going to announce a policy review. And it has been really struggling with the communication around its intentions on whether it's attempting to cap yields, which Kuroda has sort of floated, and the bond market was all over the place on that. Yields had just pipped above the highest level since, and I'm forgetting the year 2000, I think it was early 2017, and before they got crushed lower in those comments, and then a deputy governor coming out with some other comments leaning against the idea that they're going to get too strict, that they want to see two-way. They want to see it basically be able to have their cake and eat it too, a functioning bond market, but one that is capped. That sounds a very impossible task. I think it's just going to be an interesting week, a very volatile one for dollar yen. If US yields for some reason drop back lower and we see the pressure coming off there and the Bank of Japan indicates it wants to sort of let that ceiling be undefined and a bit higher, dollar yen could be in for a massive reversal back lower. On the other hand, US pressure, yield pressure continues higher and they announce some sort of a cap or a muddled message, whatever, there could be risk of a further acceleration. And we're getting into interesting levels in the Japanese yen. If you look at inflation adjusted measures, we're getting towards the all-time lows or within 4% or so of the all-time lows there. So just some perspective that dollar yen is could be one to watch next week. And Peter, we don't have your earnings calendar up for next week. We'll do that full review on Monday, but there was some earnings coming in out of China and some not coming in out of China overnight.
Yeah, exactly. We were flagging Pinduoduo and JD.com as reporting the two giants of e-commerce in China. Pinduoduo postponed to Wednesday next week. JD.com reported they showed very strong numbers on the revenue side. You can see that in the small insert here on slide 11. Revenue were up 31%. The troublesome thing about JD.com, and I don't know how much of this is the last mile delivery and logistics costs. I'll have to dig deeper into that. But if you look at the Q4 numbers, you can see that the gross margin was actually down by 1.5 percentage point from the quarter before. They were squeezed a little bit. Also, their cash from our operations were sort of, you know, it's showing quite erratic and volatile behavior quarter to quarter, which shouldn't be the case for an otherwise very stable business. I mean, e-commerce is a very stable business. It is an easy industry where you can control your margins and and everything. So I'm a little bit perplexed about this, but the share price was more or less unchanged. Has been a wild ride. But while we wait for Pinduoduo, I mean, I just want to highlight as well our e-commerce basket there to the right. I mean, it is trying to stage a rebound from that very ugly sell-off over the past couple of weeks. But if you look at the chart, I mean, you wouldn't be surprised if we could actually take an even bigger dip. And I think the two main issues, I said that on our internal call as well, that, you know, as we close the output gap and we get the stimulus going in the US, I don't think it's unreasonable to think the US 10-year yield could go to 2.5% maybe. And as we progress towards that target, I think for every 10, 20 basis points, you will see that divergence that we talked about earlier in this podcast will happen, and there will be headwind for e-commerce. And then as we get the vaccines completely rolled out by summer, then when we get into the second half, I think there could be some headwinds on the growth rates for e-commerce companies as consumers are shifting their spending habits once again.
Yeah, I'm struggling right here about next week. I think next week is going to be an absolute barn burner of a week. I think that's clear with the FOMC, with the Bank of Japan, with the Japanese yen doing what it's been doing recently, with the stimulus checks rolling out. You know, markets are always operating on forward expectations as much as, or sometimes even more than current reality. So the chief question will be, has that stimulus check effect been priced into the market? After all, we've known this is coming for quite some time, or is the actual flows hitting the market in terms of call option buying, in terms of Bitcoin buying and whatever the assets are that folks are buying, going to actually drive the price action higher? That's an open question. I don't know. But to me, yesterday, seeing the market up 200 points before the market opened and then up another 200 points intra-session, and now we're down 200 points. I'm talking about the NASDAQ 100, by the way, hours before the U.S. even opens. This market feels a little bit mental to me, to be honest. And I think maybe that's a reflection that we're going to have quite a volatile week. Everything could get touchy next week. Let's be careful out there. I've got the macro calendar on slide 12. You can have a look at that. As emphasized, FOMC next week, Wednesday, of course, Bank of Japan Friday, and the policy review with that. Even got the Bank of England and Norges Bank as well. Those treasury auctions that Altea mentioned, and a few EM central banks to boot. Brazil on Wednesday, Turkey on Thursday, and Russia on Friday. 1, 2, 3. So let's be careful out there. Helmets on, and let's see what happens. And we'll see where we stand on the other side of the weekend. Have a great weekend, and we'll be back next week with the Saxo Market Call for today. Thanks for joining.